Okay, so one of I think the most fascinating prakim in Bereishit is Perek Lamed Chet, coming as it does smack in the middle of the Yosef story, right? So it's a diversion, it seems, which is the story of Yehuda and Tamar. In many ways, I won't get into it too much, but at some level, that does seem to be the turning point in the Yosef story, right? Until that point, Yehuda is the one who sells him into slavery, and in that story, it starts off with none of the brothers want to take responsibility for each other, right? Er dies, Onan doesn't want to take responsibility, Yehuda doesn't want Shelah to take responsibility, and at the end, Yehuda does seem to take responsibility, right? And then afterwards, that begins the arc towards the positive thing. But it's really a fascinating story. So last night I got my advertor from one of my rabbim, from Rabbi Clapper, and I wanted just to share some of the ideas that he shares there. I think there's always things in this perek that are worth looking at. So as I said, many people do look at this perek the way I did. That basically this is the story of Yehuda's building character, right? He starts again. He had just sold his brother. He doesn't take responsibility for Tamar or for the brothers. And in the end, he says, or there's and there's some right, so there's some side of tshuva, some sort of atonement, right? That is one way of looking at it. But he does, Rabbi Clapper notes that there is another way of looking at it, which is right. It sounds like it might not be as much as vaya'al as he's doing tshuva, but that the real drama in the story is simply that he's getting consolation. It starts off with the death of his wife. Right, he marries and quickly his wife dies, and then he finds consolation. Now, of course, if that's the way you read the story, there really is no maturation, because you can't really say it's maturation if the story is his wife dies and he's mourning and he finds consolation by sleeping with a prostitute. Right, if you reframe the story simply on that, right, you don't see much, much character growth. What? Right. Yeah. I mean, you know. Now, in order to deal with this, so some of the Mefarshim and the Midrashim really try to present the story differently, because again, they really do want to see character growth, right? And again, even if there is character growth, it would be striking if the only character growth took place in this, right, this prostitution scene. So the Midrash Rabbah, for example, argues that Yehuda didn't want to sleep with Tamar, right? He saw her in Lo Ashkech. He didn't pay attention, and then she covered her face, right? And he said, "Ilo aita zonai tamechasef anat meha." If she was a prostitute, would she cover her face? And he wanted to leave. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan bikesh laavor v'zimen lo Hakadosh Baruch Hu malach shumumena la taava. Amar lo leichan ata holech Yehuda meichan melachim omdim umeichan golim omdim vayitel al karchol shlo betovato. And there the midrash said that the malach of desire came and shoved him, right, and said, "Where do you think you're going? Right, this is where Mashiach is coming from, and you had no choice." Now, right, according to this, first of all, Yehuda doesn't willingly engage in this whole story, which obviously makes it much easier to see this as one of spiritual growth. Furthermore, this midrash goes farther and says that she was covering her face, which led him to believe that she was not a prostitute, right? And therefore, even, right, not only was it that he was forced by an angel, but he only slept with her even under coercion by an angel when he realized that she wasn't really a prostitute.
So did he have no bechira in this case, because you're saying that they had no.
Well, that's right. So that's what this midrash suggests, right? Now, obviously, this midrash is trying to, right, see, right, to take out that sinful partner. And the Alshech goes even farther and says that when she covered her face, it wasn't just that he realized she wasn't a prostitute, but as we know from the story of Yitzchak, that when Rivka saw Yitzchak, she covered her face, right, which suggests that maybe, right, right, it wasn't just modesty, but maybe he even realized that she wanted to get married, right? The fact that when Rivka sees Yitzchak, who's supposed to be her husband, she covers her face. It might be modesty, it might even be more. It might be that was a symbol that they were looking for marriage, right? Which would obviously put a different spin, right? That yes, she looked like a prostitute, but when you look more carefully and saw her face covered, not only did she realize he wasn't a prostitute, but perhaps he realized that marriage was actually, right? I mean, right, in what do you mean? In Torah, that's one of the ways that you can get married, right? Asian, right? Yeah, right, Asian, because of Shar B'Biyah.
Isn't it, like, very, also, like,
first of all,
isn't it very frowned upon? Second of all, it is intended.
Yes, but it's still, it is a form of, right? It is a way of marriage, right?
So
meaning this.
If you're intending to have a real life, then why would you make it? I don't know what. You're doing the whole thing where he had deal with her, and then he left, and she got pregnant, and he was like, okay, now I'll be good.
Well, because that's the right. So there you would just say, well, she disappeared, right? Meaning, what you would say if you wanted to go in the Al-Shif direction, you would say is that this negotiation wasn't about her price as a prostitute, but it was actually like what he was, you know, like the ksuba or something, right? And then, right, he says, "I'll come back," and she disappears, right? But he doesn't realize it's Tamar, right? That's the whole point of the story. He doesn't realize it was Tamar. Now. Right, this might make it less bad that he slept with her, but it doesn't solve the problem of, as you say, he jumps to say, "Oh, Tamar, right, is pregnant. Let's kill her." Right, there's still that side of the story. What? Kill her, burn her. Right now, the Malbim says exactly what you said. The Malbim tries to say, "Nah, he didn't say burn her. It's more like the Scarlet Letter, right? It was like brand her, right? They would brand." Okay. But going back to the, right, what did he think was going on? So Rav Chaim Paltiel actually argues that Vayechshaveh Lizona is he thought she was looking for marriage. Right, basically he's going from Ayeha Kidesha, where is the prostitute, is rather, is the, who is the, where's the one looking for Kiddushin, which is very surprising and also only works rabbinically and not in biblical. Correct, and he's reading it rabbinically as Kiddushin, right, which is very unlikely. Right, on the other hand, there are other pieces of evidence here. Now, you know, Ray Clapier quotes his wife, Deborah, as saying that maybe, right, one of the reasons was that she's covering her face, right, which seems unlikely that you know, only harlots cover their face, right? Maybe that's part of it. I'll come back to that in just a minute. Right, Clapper adds that, right, he does say, Havana, right, Avoyla, let me, right, be with you, which is a language of Kiddushin by Yaakov, right, Havana ishti v'avoyleha. And he also suggests that maybe another evidence that he originally was looking for marriage was the fact that he extends credit, right? Right, he doesn't, right, if he's a prostitute doesn't usually say, you know, okay, you know, give me a check, right? Right? And it might bounce or something, right? Like, you know, here he's saying, like, give me a mashkon, right? I'll come back, right? And Yehuda gives her, like, basically, like, his, right, his private things, like his, you know, social security card and passport and whatever, right? Which is very much blackmail tools, right? And, right, he doesn't seem to be embarrassed about going around and saying, where was the Kadesha, right? I have to pay her, right? Like, the story does sound like there's less, right? And Tamar says, what will you give me? Rather than setting a price, which probably is, you know, more likely for a prostitute. So it is possible, as he said, maybe not in Pshat, but there is maybe a good reason to believe that this story really isn't about him sleeping with a prostitute. Maybe that it started, but maybe there really was marriage in the background. And of course, if there is marriage in the background, right, it totally changes the story. And it's much more likely to see this story as one of growth for Yehuda if it's a story of him trying to get married, right, remarried after his wife died. Right? And to be fair, right, when he first met his wife, it's not like we know that much about his right, his original wife, right? He saw her, he married her, right? It wasn't like there was necessarily a long dating. So it's possible that, right, since this whole thing was about marriage, right, that would at least soften it and make it more likely, right, that this really is the story of tshuva. Now, right, Clapper just notes at the end that this would go far in explaining why this wasn't a sin, but it still wouldn't necessarily explain why this is the story of Yehuda's spiritual ascent, right? Now we've sort of softened the blow. Like, was he really a sinner, right? But this is supposed to be a story of him becoming great. Right, Clapper suggests tentatively that maybe you could say, well, look, in the end of the day, this woman was in a place where she might have been seen as a zona. And if you think that he marries her, right, that means he's seeing her as a woman to enter into a relationship when other people might have seen a zona, right? Which might actually support the notion that, right, this is a humanizing chapter for Yehuda, right? Where it's a story about him coming to recognize the humanity in people, right? And successfully seeing her as someone who wanted to get married rather than as a zona, which would have, right, which might indeed set the groundwork, right? And it could be that at the end, right, the fact that he goes farther and allows Tamar to educate him, right, Sadkami Meni, right, furthers that process where he's willing to, right, here's someone that he was sending out to death, and he's willing to accept that he's wrong, right, that further supports it. So I think that's an interesting idea to say that if this is the story of Yehuda's greatness, then maybe we have to soften the idea that this is really a story of his own now and more of him, one, seeking a wife, right, and therefore, right, him seeking a wife when someone else might have seen a prostitute is indeed a case where you see Yehuda's ability to see the humanity in people and not objectify them, which would begin the process of, right, after having sold his brother and treating him like, right, chattel, right, to not doing that, right, and taking responsibility for his brothers, right, and therefore it might, right, that's another way of seeing this. I will just note parenthetically, very quickly, that the Midrash suggests, right, the Gemara, the Psukim say that the reason that Yehuda didn't recognize Tamar was ki chisita panea, which simply means that her face was covered. Right, the Midrash flips it and says ki chisita panea means that the reason he didn't recognize her was because when she was married, she always covered her face, and now her face was uncovered. Right, which sounds like, right, a classic Midrashic like flip. Though I did once talk to Dr. Barry Eichler, who at the time was the dean of Yeshiva College, and he said that even though us as modern readers reading the Psukim think that Chazal are not pshat, as a Syriologist, as an expert in the ancient Near East, he actually thinks that that's pshat. I went to his office to ask him about this, and he pulled off a law book from the time of Avram Avinu off his shelf, right? Whoa. And he's a Syriologist. He's a cuneiformist.
And he's really cool.
Yes, I mean, one of the experts in the world. And he said, even though it doesn't seem like pshat to you, but he pulled off and he said, here, look. And the law is married women must cover their face, and prostitutes are not allowed to cover their face by law, right? Right, in the ancient Near East, right? So he's like, what? Ancient Near East, right? That area, right? That's right. So he actually argued that that was pshat, right? In that Chazal were pshat from a historical level. He did note there's a bit of an ambiguity in how you translate. I think, I don't know if it was Akkadian or Ugaritic, I don't remember which one he showed me. As to whether the law was about covering your face or covering your hair, his inclination, and again, he's one of the world experts in the field, so I tend to give that weight, is that it probably means both, right? That married women had to cover their hair and face, right? Which, of course, we know from the Gemara that married women cover their hair, right? That was just what people did, it wasn't, right? Which is part of the halachic discussion of how much of it is halacha and how much of it is, you know, practice, right? Because the Gemara itself says some of it is dat Moshe and some of it is just dat Yehudi, what people did, right? So it could be both. But at any rate, he argues that from an ancient Near East perspective, it actually is the most likely read, right? Not like this, right? Not that Tamar was covering her face, but like Chazal, that she was not covering her face. And that's why he thought it was a prostitute, which of course would undermine this pshat. But I think it's an interesting piece of ancient Near East thing where Dafket gives support to Chazal.
Does he not think the reason why it was that way?
Yeah, presumably, right? That married women needed to, right, be modest, and prostitutes, right? It was like you were allowed to not be modest, but like, right? Prostitution was allowed, but like it had to be open, right? You had to be, exactly, right? Something like that. It's a fascinating piece. I was like, and I got into a machloket with my chavrusa about it, where I was like, this is like such a weird midrash. And my chavrusa was like, you wouldn't have a midrash is that weird unless Chazal had a reason. Because sometimes Chazal adds something, but it's very weird for them to flip it 180 degrees. So we agreed that I would go ask Dean Eichler and see what he said. And my chavrusa was right. And he's like, no, I think that's right. You know, Yeah, he was great. Dean Echler was like, he's an amazing person. He is an amazing person.
Seems like it wasn't really prostitution.